News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 6th of January, Anno Domini 2008. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. Give us a call. You just heard the numbers. Let's go, go, go.
You know, it's still a pain in the butt.
I'm sorry.
The first few weeks of the new year.
Yeah.
Always getting used to writing 08 instead of 07.
No, see, the first few weeks I don't have a problem. It's along about March. I find myself writing 07 again.
Well, fortunately, really? 07 can be changed into an 8 pretty easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did any of you see, you probably saw Dick Clark on New Year's Eve.
Who didn't?
Oh, man. Isn't that sad?
That poor guy.
You know, he needs to retire, I think.
He does.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, he tried so hard, but
catching up to him
just kind of ruined the mood. I mean, you're just watching somebody
I felt so sorry for him as he tried to struggle, you know, just to talk through it. He's like, let's remember the show the way it was.
Yeah,
that's right.
But still, he looked so much better this year than he did two years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and it was good. Nice to see him vertical.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Maybe we now need a Dick Clark thing along with the Abe Vigoda thing.
Well, the guy who was on Channel 8, I think it was, looked a lot like Dick Clark.
Yeah.
Because I was surfing around the different channels between 8, 10, and 13. The young kid that they had on Channel 8 looked very much alike, a very young Dick Clark.
Cool.
Scary.
Well, if you're going to be flying next year, the Boeing 6-month-old 787 Dreamliner passenger jet may have a serious security vulnerability. And it's onboard computer networks that could allow passengers to access the plane's control systems, according to the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration. I don't know that that's going to be a good thing. The computer network in the Dreamliner's passenger compartment, designed to give passengers in-flight internet access, is connected to the plane's control, navigation, and communication systems.
Cool. Who thought that was a good idea?
Yeah, the revelation is causing concern in security circles. Because the physical connection of the networks makes the plane's control systems vulnerable to hackers. A more secure design would physically separate the two computer networks. Yes. Boeing said it's aware of the issue. It has designed a solution that it will test shortly. Currently in the final stages of production, the 787 Dreamliner is Boeing's new midsize jet, which will seat between 210 and 330 passengers, depending on configuration. Boeing says it has taken more than 800 advanced orders for the new plane, which is due to enter service in November 2008. But the FAA is requiring Boeing to demonstrate that it has addressed the computer network issue before the planes begin service. According to the FAA, the vulnerability exists because the plane's computer systems connect the passenger network with the flight safety control and navigation network. It also connects the airline's business and administrative support network, which communicates maintenance issues to ground crews. The design allows new kinds of passenger connectivity to previously isolated data networks connected to systems that perform functions required for the safe operation of the plane. Okay, I can't bring shampoo on a plane, but if I bring my laptop, I can control
the
plane.
You're good to go, yeah.
Can you imagine this in the future? You open up your laptop, you open a window, says, new device found.
And take it over.
Driver's being installed. You may now play with your Boeing 787.
And you had a joystick on hand.
New device found. Ooh.
Well, Nick, I can tell you that FAA rule that they have to test this thing, that's not new. That's been in place for decades, and it's standard procedure. All that stuff is so thoroughly tested out before it ever takes off with a passenger on it that it's going to be completely safe.
Yes, but what moron in the IT department thought we can save 84 cents by just using the same set of wiring?
Well, there was, I think it was Eastern Airlines decided to save $50,000 a year some time ago by using two olives in a salad instead of three.
Mm-hmm.
So it all comes down to the MBAs and the White Towers.
Yes, I understand that, but they need, clearly they just got slapped and reality has happened. That's just the silliest freaking thing ever on earth. All right.
I'm saying a related story. NTSB, is it? No, who's in charge of security on airplanes now?
Yeah, Homeland Security, but it's the National Traffic
Something or other.
Safety Board.
I'm trying to find out, banning spare lithium batteries.
That's right.
So if you carry an extra battery for your laptop, an extra battery for your camera, an extra battery for any battery-operated device, you now can't take it on an airplane. These are the stupid rules. You can't take it on an airplane unless you put it in the plastic bag.
Sure.
The big thing is you can't check it. They've apparently blamed several airplane cargo fires on overheating batteries because we had that big battery mess a couple years ago.
Right.
So now, 2 years later, they are now banning those batteries after the problem's been fixed. So add that to the list of things you can't take on board an airplane and have to put in a plastic bag. Now, my boss wanted to buy a plastic bag dispensing machine and put it at the airport.
That's not a bad idea.
Because she got stuck with all the makeup she had bought, and they wanted her, it was more than 2 ounces. They wanted her to throw it away. Well, no, that's hundreds of dollars worth of makeup.
Right.
Well, I suppose you could use a plastic bag. Do you have any?
Yeah, right. All right. Our first caller is Marcy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Marcy. What's your question?
Hey, Nick. We ordered the $100 laptops just like you, but you got yours. How did yours arrive? The kids are keep saying, how's it coming? I said, I don't know. So we don't know who to attack first as they walk down the street.
Well, it came UPS. Oh, no, FedEx.
Ah.
It came and it was in its own brown box with just the label, on it. I ordered it the first minute of the first day.
Okay. Ours was like the first couple days.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You've got to wait.
She's probably in the queue.
I'm sorry, Marcy, but you've got to wait.
Oh, come on. I mean, the first 2 or 3 days, you'd think we'd get cut us a break.
No, they had like a million orders in the first 5 minutes.
Wow.
I was not the first person to get one, believe me when I tell you this. It was huge.
Well received.
Well received. I think they're even still doing it.
Really? I knew they continued to the end of the year, but I didn't know if they went past the 31st.
No, I think they're now doing it in January.
Extending it again. Wow, because, I went online and I checked the potential delivery dates, and it doesn't quite, that needs to be updated.
Yeah, right.
The delivery days are taking us a while, and the kids are going crazy, and they've already dubbed them Martians because they're green and they have antennas.
Oh, yeah.
So every time someone comes by, he goes, is this guy delivering the Martians?
No. And they're all going, well, I don't, these kids need to be locked up somewhere.
Yeah, because we saw every time the mailman comes by or UPS truck comes by or anything, they go, is it them? I don't know. I don't even know how they're sending it. Well, ask Nick.
Yeah, that's Nick. .com.
There you go. That would be an odd question, but they had to know. So I said, oh, now we know who to watch for. So it's that FedEx truck.
There you go. That's how it came to me. Who knows? We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 15 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 20 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. That'll be the next big mockumentary. We are Soundbites. Microsoft will be providing a new and easy way for customers to unblock the files were shut off by default when they installed Office 2003 Service Pack 3. I don't honestly remember if we talked about this at the time. When you installed Office 2003 Service Pack 3, or when you run Office 2007, it dumped support for old versions of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint files, as well as the Corel WordPerfect suite, actually for their CDR files. And Microsoft is now providing an easy way for customers to unblock all of those things. Microsoft also confirmed that all the same files are blocked by Office 2007, which was released a year ago, and the company had erred when it stated the file formats themselves were less secure, which is not the case. They said that all of those file formats were not secure, so they were not going to support them. As it turns out, it's the parsing code that Office 2003 and 2007 uses to open and save the file types, which is less secure. So Microsoft released Service Pack 3 back in September, along with a white paper listing the files that it blocked for being less secure. This included many of its own legacy files for Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, as well as CorelDRAW's .cdr files. Microsoft also released a knowledge base article that detailed how customers could unblock these files by changing the registry, a complex, time-consuming, and error-prone process. But Microsoft is now giving customers an easier way to unblock and reblock these files. The way this will work is that there is a separate unblocker for each application, so there will be one for Word, another Excel, another for PowerPoint. It's also an all-or-nothing scenario, so if you use the one for Word, it unblocks every file type that was blocked before. Microsoft is taking heat for this format blocking move, as Microsoft had mistakenly said it was the file formats themselves that were less secure rather than the parsing code. The company has updated its knowledge base article with more accurate information that corrects the error. The new article also includes links to code customers can download to unblock and reblock the files. Microsoft is, of course, warning you that doing so may increase your security risk because they haven't fixed their parsing code. Sorry, did I say that out loud? All right.
No.
So if you've been bothered by the fact that you can no longer open your own files that you originally had before, this fixes that.
And one of the irony is the right word. For years now, Outlook and Outlook Express have blocked Word documents as potentially insecure because so many viruses and malware attach themselves as a Word document. So in Microsoft's own email program, you can't necessarily read Word files.
In my class, I am forbidding Word documents to be sent to me. You use OpenOffice or you save it as an RTF document.
I'm glad you brought that up because the more you read to us about Microsoft Office and the problems with it, the more I like OpenOffice.
Yep. I love OpenOffice, but I'm not insisting people use it. I want either, text files. I'll accept text files. I'll accept PDFs. I'll accept OpenOffice files or RTF documents. That's it, which is a form of text file, really. So
Yeah. That's
it. That's all I'm going to accept. I don't even care anymore. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
Hi, guys. My question, sometimes I think I know what I'm doing.
Congratulations. Yeah. You're up one up on most of us.
Yeah, well, most of the time I'm not that foolish. I have two computers and one brand new external hard drive, and I'd like to know how to share that external hard drive as like a backup for both of the computers. They're both running HP, the play-at-home version of HP, or XP, and they're hooked together via a wireless network right now that I use for getting out to the internet.
Okay. Is this external hard drive plugged into the network somewhere or on one of the computers?
It's on one of the computers.
Boy, Okay. Backing it up over a wireless is going to be painfully slow.
Well, I think it just wants to access same files from both machines on that.
Yeah, and if you let it run at night, if you let it run at night, it almost doesn't matter how long it takes.
That's...
But it's fairly easy to do on the computer that the drive is physically connected to. You're going to right-click on that drive and choose sharing and share that drive to the network.
And allow it to make changes and everything.
There's a second option to allow other users to change the files on that drive.
Okay.
And then on the other computer, if you're lucky, you go to your network neighborhood and
it
shows up.
And they should see it. Yeah, it'll show it up underneath that
computer. Can you see the other computer from your machine?
I haven't tried. I don't think so.
You got to make sure they're first in both the same work group and that you got sharing turned on.
Right, sharing might not be turned on. And then even after you turn sharing on, you actually have to share a folder.
Yeah, and if you share just that one hard drive on the other machine, say on PC1, and then you go to PC2, and they're all both the same work group. If you go to the network neighborhood, you'll see PC1 there. If you double-click on it, it should show that hard drive as a shared device.
Oh. Okay.
Now, it'll be easier if the username and password on both machines is the same. Otherwise, you'll have to log in as the owner of the machine that has the drive physically connected to it.
I think they're different, but I'll look. Okay.
Yeah, it can be done, and that's some of the security you can put on it, so you can have a private folder that only one computer can see and the other computer can't based on the username they're logging in as.
Okay, well, I'll give it a shot, and if smoke starts coming out of here,
there you go.
I think I'll stop. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, all right.
One of the confusions in Windows is if you open your My Computer, you see that Share Documents folder. Oh, that's neat. I can share my documents. That's only for users on that same computer.
Right.
To share to remote users on your network, you have to jump through some more hoops. There should be a better way to distinguish between a local share and a remote share.
You would think so.
You'd think. Yeah.
Perhaps you could call them local and remote shares.
That would be good, yeah.
It's me. I'm a smart guy. All right. Our next caller is Jeff from Webster, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
I am impressed.
Good morning, fellas. How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Great, great. Hey, I downloaded a file on my computer off of a reliable website. I have an HP PC running XP Home. The file ends with a BAS suffix. I assume that's basic language. Windows said it couldn't open it because it doesn't recognize the file, or I should say the program that created it.
Right. That would be true if it's basic.
It said, do you want to search for an opener? So, yeah, it took me to a Microsoft page, and there was a whole bunch of things about basic language there, but there was also things there about system scans and all this other Google advertisement kind of looking stuff. How do I know which is a good file to use and that it's going to be a reliable?
That's the $24 million question. Yeah, you have to know what's a good basic interpreter.
Uh-huh.
Or you ask someone that does.
Okay.
Which is what you're doing, so you're doing the right thing.
All right, cool.
Microsoft wants you to pay, what, how much does Visual Basic cost these days?
A lot.
It's got a comma in the price.
Yeah, I think it
and
does.
And it's about 3 feet long on the shelf.
Uh-huh. Now, what is this file that you downloaded for what?
It's a electric wire size calculator that this guy created for my field.
Well, you could ask him to re-release it as an EXE file, an executable program. Instead
he should be able to compile it. So
instead of requiring you to have your own basic interpreter, he could release it as a program.
That would be easier and a heck of a lot, you know, especially if he wants to get it out there in the community. That's the way to do it, than requesting everybody to go out and buy Visual Basic.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Well, you don't have to buy Visual Basic.
There's got to be some other
Real Basic at realbasic.com.
Uh-huh.
That still, I believe, I do not know that there's a free version of that.
Yeah, you download their trial and see what happens. It's a basic interpreter for you to write your own programs.
Okay.
You don't really want to write your own programs. You want to use his, so it'd be better for him to release it as an EXE file.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate
Compile it.
All righty.
Remember the olden days when that's all you got? You turned your computer on and a flashing cursor was your basic interpreter?
Yeah, and you know what? I think it's a sad thing that we don't have built-in programming languages anymore. I would prefer it to be fourth, of course, but pretty much any programming language would be a good thing to have on the computer to teach kids to do stuff, you know?
Yeah, logo.
Yeah, logo. Every program should have logo. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, the Mac does come with C++ and GCC and all these, you know, Unix compiling tools.
Right, so does Linux.
But it's a nice, easy, basic interpreter. That's what it was designed for.
There's also one, oh dear, hold on a second. There's also one, another free one called, I don't remember, hold on.
YA Basic, I think I just found.
Yeah, YA Basic, yeah, yet another basic. That's the one I was looking for.
Yeah. Freebyte.com, trying to find the links to it.
We'll put links up.
Just one called Just Basic. That's a free basic compiler for Windows.
There you go. Any one of those. I don't know that Real Basic is free. There might be a trial version or there might be a...
There is.
All right. But that's, again, a trial version. You probably can't, you know, eventually it's going to die and you're going to have to pay for it. But if there are other free basics for Windows, then that's definitely all Jeff's really going to need to run that program. There used to be an amazing amount of code written in BASIC that does all kinds of fun and interesting things, only it's kind of faded from the public conscience because you don't have a BASIC interpreter anymore.
Well, it's just like you used to be able to get online, Turbo Pascal, download the whole compiler.
Yep.
I used to do Pascal.
Now everybody's all into like C and things like that, but those are not as easy as BASIC was. BASIC was designed to be for a beginner. That's what the B stands for. It's beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction language.
It was close to real language.
Something. Yep. Compiler, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it was designed to be easy to learn.
And, of course, one of the reasons it died was because it was slow, because it was an interpreter. But now we have 2 gigahertz machines are slow. We don't need the speed anymore.
And you have to define slow. Now, this guy's got this this application that does all his figuring for him. If it takes 2 minutes to do it, and it would have taken him 7 minutes, that's not slow.
Right.
Well, the wiring wiring guide, that you know, the mnemonic that we can't say on the air for knowing the resistor color code.
Oh, right.
Ravish.
Okay, bad boys ravish our young girls, but violent goes willingly.
Yeah, right.
I worry about this guy.
Oh, no.
You didn't learn resistor color code mnemonics?
All right.
Used to be behind Victory Garden walls, but no one knows what a Victory Garden is anymore.
Right.
That was World War One, was it, or World War II? Yeah. So now the Violet was willingly got thrown in.
Yeah, right.
And we just lost to half the 90% of the audience.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And the old time electronics guys are snickering.
Yeah, right.
That's Violet with a Y.
Both of them who still have the energy to snicker. Violet with a Y. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen.
Who came in?
Laughing along with you, being a guy that started out with vacuum tubes.
There you go.
I have a question. Compatibility between Windows 2000 programs and Windows XP programs. First comment I have is, if you guys are so upset with Microsoft, stop giving XP so many kudos. I mean, I've been running Windows 2000, and I just love the thing, and I never have to worry about calling Microsoft for any kind of special codes.
Right.
But compatibility with a lot of the XP programs out there, I see a lot of software boxes that are marked compatible with 2000 and XP, and a lot of them are marked straight XP. And I'm wondering if the codes and the XP stuff will be backward compatible with my 2000 system. I get a little leery every time I want to buy a piece of software and it says XP only.
And you should, Ed, and that's the reason we don't give so many kudos to 2000. I'm still running a 2000 server at home, and it chugs along every day without a question. But I don't try to put anything new on it. It's just a server. All right, I was just going to say, when people test these things now, they're not testing them against 2000 because 2000 isn't being sold anymore.
That's important.
So they don't even bother to test it. Will it run? Maybe, but it's a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another thing I like about it, too. If I do get a piece of software and I test it on it and somehow it messes it up, all I got to do is throw my disk back in. I can reload the whole system. I mean, you know, it's a godsend. I don't know why Microsoft ever went to this where you have to call them up repeatedly for code. I mean, you think they'd be able to scan the internet and find if somebody's running multiple copies of the same serial number.
They do, and that's the problem.
It bogs down the internet and bogs down your network,
You guys are doing a great job. I really appreciate your show, and can't say anymore. And it is a shame there is no languages out there for the kids to learn. That's another bad thing about XP. I mean, if you go back with some of the older operating systems where you could get in there and do some basic programming, A+, and you can get into C+. But now the programs that are out there, you just can't do anything with them without running risk of corrupting everything.
Well, exactly. The folks in the forum here were talking about Quick Basic or QBasic and Power Basic. So there are things that are there. The problem is you don't get them with the machine anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's really where the problem lies.
Can I hit you with one last quick question?
I don't know, can you? Yeah.
My system, I set it up as a dual boot, so I can go back and play with my old favorite ME and my new favorite 2000. But I was wondering if I went to a new machine, like an XP machine, would I be able to load some old-fashioned software like 2000 in it to make it a dual boot system so I could go back and tinker with the older stuff? Or would the
You should be able to dual boot. I haven't ever done it, so I can't give you instructions.
Or tri-boot. You just may need a new version of your dual boot loader that knows about XP and 2000 and ME, which might be hard to find. The easier thing is to put multiple hard drives in it. OS has its own hard drive.
I was just going to ask you, if I daisy chain, like the other gentleman was talking about, the hard drive you wanted to share between computers there, I was wondering if I bought some cheap 40-gig drive and just daisy chained it in there and put the system on it and tinker with that way. So
That's often a lot easier than trying to set up a dual boot on one hard drive.
Right, and that will work for as many drives as you have. You just reboot and hit whatever that button is that lets you pick your drive and go.
Yeah, great. Hey, guys, great job. Thank you very much for all your info.
Thank you so much.
That's not uncommon in the software world for backward testing. We ran into it over Christmas with the Apple iPod. Apple, Microsoft, most of the other companies are supporting the current OS and one previous version. If you happen to be running two versions ago or three versions ago, you're often out of luck. Half the time it's because they didn't bother testing it, or it's because they're using features that only exist in the new version.
Right.
So that's one thing to make sure that you're not more than one OS behind when you're looking to buy new things.
Right. Right.
The problem now is it's getting harder and harder to buy the old OS.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Rick from Batavia, New York. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
I've got a game that I've played on my Windows 2000 for years and years. Well, I upgraded computers, got Windows XP, won't play it. Even though it says, you know, you've got to, when you click on it, it says run as a Windows 95 and all that stuff.
Right. What error message do you get?
Information is not compatible, I recall, or something like that.
Yeah, that run as only works for some things, and games are especially notorious for not working.
Yeah.
One of the problems that games often have, had, and still have, is that they screw around with the video drivers. It may well be that XP is not letting it.
And the particular video driver that that game wants to mess around with is just not on its list or knows how to handle it.
Well, I've searched the internet for information on it, and everybody seems to say, put it on your old computer and play it on your old computer.
Yeah, unfortunately.
All right, I just wondered if you had a quick solution, knew a site somewhere maybe that could...
The only real support you'll get is if you go back to that particular game web page and see if folks found a workaround there.
All right, thanks a lot.
Yep, sorry.
And that's, you know, go back again, keep an old computer around running the old S, unconnected from the internet. So
running the old S?
Run an old computer running the old OS, not connected to the internet, so you can play your old games.
Yeah, it's pretty much the way you're going to have to do it. All right, we got time for one last call? Yes, we do. Rob wakes up and nods his head, or he's just nodding his head because he's falling asleep. All right, our next caller is, I have no idea.
It just says, oh, from Quicken.
Who's this? Hello?
Oh.
I can't hear you.
Push your button, Ross.
Steve from Batavia.
Steve!
Yes. How are you?
Great, how are you?
Good. I know you guys have been known for saying there are lots of problems with Vista, and I never encountered
us? No! Wouldn't do that!
Sure you would. We all would. But I never encountered any problems until Thanksgiving time when Quicken decided to just stop working for no apparent reason. You guys heard of this before?
Which version of Quicken?
I'm using Home and Business 2008. From what I've seen in the Quicken community forums and stuff, it's not really just restricted to that. It's like it just comes up saying Quicken Launcher has stopped working. And Quicken Help Desk should be called the Helpless Desk.
Right.
They had that huge issue a couple weeks ago with 2006 for Mac, deleting your desktop.
Yeah, right.
Which they just released a patch so it won't happen again. Just.
Yeah, wow. It's interesting because Quicken themselves say that the latest version, only the latest version, will work with Vista, and yet the community is all up in arms about the problems.
I hate to say it. I rolled back, and I'm one of the people who truly likes Vista.
I'm so sorry.
Well, as we said, there's nothing really wrong with the OS as long as you don't run anything else.
Yeah.
Printers, software, scanners, anything else you might have trouble with.
Right.
But yeah, it looks like that is an issue in the Quicken community. And it's,
we'll continue to look into it, but I don't have an answer for you right off the bat because there is...
Back to roll back to a previous version or wait for the next version?
No, previous versions definitely don't work.
Yeah,
really? Maybe the patch, the R5, R4, something like that.
We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Yeah, we alluded to this earlier, but in a move that would mark the end of a digital music era, Sony BMG Music Entertainment is finalizing plans to sell songs without the copyright protection software that has long restricted the use of music downloaded from the internet. Sony BMG will make at least part of its collection available without so-called digital rights management or DRM software sometime this quarter. Sony BMG would become the last of the top four music labels to drop DRM following Warner Music Group, which late in December said it would sell DRM-free songs through Amazon's digital music store. EMI and Vivendi's Universal Music Group announced their plans for DRM-free downloads earlier in 2007. As I continue to say, please buy DRM-free music when you buy music so that we will encourage them to keep giving it to us DRM-free. The impetus to lift copyright protection represents a sea change for the recording industry, which for the better part of a decade has used DRM to guard against what it considers illegal distribution and duplication of songs purchased online. In abandoning DRM on an a la carte song purchase,
The labels could create a raft of new, less restrictive ways of selling music over the internet, such as through social networks like Facebook and MySpace. Partnerships with retailers such as Amazon could also help the music industry take a swipe at Apple, which has come to dominate the legal download market through a one-size-fits-all pricing scheme record labels find restrictive. Details of the plan are expected to emerge in the coming weeks. Justin Timberlake, the popular recording artist signed to the Sony-owned Jive label, is participating in a Super Bowl promotion with Pepsi that will kick off February 3rd and offer free distribution of 1 billion songs from major labels, including Sony BMG, through Amazon's DRM-free download service, according to a person familiar with that matter. Sony has been experimenting with DRM-free songs for about 6 months. The company began giving away DRM-free promotional downloads for recording artists that sell less than 100,000 units, and at least one artist gained mainstream exposure through the effort. A lot of these tests have led people to believe that maybe this works. So a Sony BMG spokesman declined to comment. But that should be pretty interesting. It looks like now the big four will all have DRM-free content available.
The irony is that so far only... I got to find a better word. The annoyance is that only EMI is currently selling it through iTunes. So the other record companies...
only an annoyance for you. Well, for me, who isn't using an iPod, I don't care. Yeah.
The other record companies are sticking it to Apple.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. Our next caller is Carol from Bristol, New York. Welcome, Carol. What's your question?
Hi. I have an HP Invent Millennium Windows.
Yes.
We've hooked it all up, and we played games and stuff on it. And a couple days ago, we went to turn it on, and it's just a blue screen, and nothing will pop up. We can't get into the computer. We can't do emails. We can't do anything.
Right. Once you hit the blue screen, somebody's got to play with it. Now, you said this is an ME machine, a Millennium machine?
Yes.
We're all holding Dave down, preventing him from getting to the microphone. Unfortunately, I'll speak first while Dave wipes the foam off of his mouth. ME is sit down and do your meditation. ME is no longer sold by Microsoft. It is no longer supported by Microsoft.
Although they might resurrect it to get rid of this stuff.
Yeah. And you'd like that. You never thought you'd find anything you hated more than ME.
I was just listening to a podcast where they were talking about that. Is Vista the next ME?
Yeah. The problem is that ME has never had a lot of... ME is a Millennium Edition. ME has never had a lot of support. Microsoft abandoned it young. And you can't really get any support for it. You can still take your machine to someone like Dave or Steve, and they will do what they can, but nobody can make a promise to resurrect an ME machine anymore.
If there's no data that you want to save anymore, you can put your restore disks in, erase the hard drive, and start over. That might work, but you'll lose any data you have on the computer.
Well, right. They can install like us, ME over ME.
Yeah, that might work as well. And there's instructions on our link list on
but
how to do that.
Give Dave a call, and he can bring it down to him, and he can, you know, charge it. That's his business, but he can do that for you. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 50 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Well, kiddies, it's that time once again. Go put on your footy jammies, grab your mug of hot cocoa, and sit in Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, I gotta
he's still humming!
I gotta mention this. A couple of my friends...
come on now. No, seriously.
You got a couple?
Yeah, they asked...
Well, he's getting up there.
Oh, how'd they word it? Your little spiel here for Uncle Dave's Story Hour, spiel you give at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
They asked when you taped that.
It's all live.
Yeah, did you say exactly the same thing, word for word, inflection for inflection?
I spent 20 years as a professional actor. Yeah. That's my job.
And they kept wondering who, when you go, and I'm Nick Francesco, you sometimes goes fast, and they wondered who that Emma Francesco was.
Emma Francesco. Many people think my daughter's name is Emma. Go ahead, Uncle Dave.
New year. I'm going to start out, you know, pleasant.
Well, that's the end of that segment then.
Okay, dragon breath. All right.
There we go.
Yeah. You know, tell you what. Tell me if I'm wrong, folks. If you go into the doctors and you go in there with a broken foot, Then you go out later on and all of a sudden develop a toothache. You go back to that same doctor and say, why didn't you check for that too?
All right. Well, my tooth didn't hurt before I came to you.
Hello. Yeah, right. This is it. You know, you get a machine, it comes in, and it's infested. We go ahead and clean it up. And then a few things aren't working. Well, you brought it in for this problem. Well, why didn't you check them all? Do you know how long it would take?
And how big your bill would be?
Well, that yeah.
If we spent hours
checking every GD program that you've got on your machine. But I had him say, well, it was working okay when it came in. Well, yeah, because the spyware and Trojans were doing their thing. But what you brought it in for, remember, you wrote it down, it's running slower. Well, that's what it's supposed to do. Yeah, it still wants to keep it running so it can get out there and do its job and steal your information and everything else and spread it all over the darn World Wide Web.
So but it attaches to a lot of your programs.
So it's working, and it keeps it working so it can do that. But the minute we take it off, yes, it might break some other things. I can't help that. If you didn't go and not protect your machine and, oh, once in a while, run the security tangle like we have been saying for how long?
Yeah, right. Yep. Years and years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, wake up. We can only lead you to the water. I can't make you drink. It just isn't going to happen, folks. And unless you sit there and take the time, I know we all have very busy lives, and I get it all the time. Well, I meant to, you know, keep everything running smooth for you folks. But I can only do it up to a certain point. So, yes, at times things when you get home aren't going to work. Maybe.
Well, then the next problem, we'll just reinstall it from your original disks.
Yeah. Well, shouldn't you have done that?
I don't have the original discs.
Yeah, oh, that's my favorite. Yeah.
Which one? Yeah.
Well, I don't have the original discs.
My program isn't working. We'll just reinstall it.
Don't even bring it back to me if you don't have the originals and it's some copy. That's the other thing. I'll give folks a, well, reinstall. All right. And they bring it back in. Wait a minute. This isn't the original. Yeah, it's a copy of it. Well, then bring me back the original. I don't have it. Then I can't help you.
That's my backup copy.
Well, you broke
that's a little
gray,
because that may be your legal backup copy.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, so keep your discs, keep your manuals, try not to lose them. You're going to need them again.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, you don't get manuals so much anymore. All right. We have the tranquilizer darts ready. Let's move in, gentlemen. All you kiddies, rinse out your coffee, your cocoa mugs, put them in the dishwasher. Go get dressed again and wander off to your real lives, because we are done not only with Uncle Dave's Story Hour, but we are done with this first hour of Soundbites. We will be back on the other side of the news, weather, and sports, which is, of course, the stuff you really listen to Wham for, with more of Dave Enright, the real Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco. Just so you get that straight. We'll be back on the other side of all of that stuff with a whole lot more of your calls. If you're not on the line, I don't know why you're not on the line. We're having fun. You should join in. Speaking of which, we'll be back with Soundbites. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. All right, if you're on the line, hold on, but I want to talk for just a minute about what happens at our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was, what was your New Year's resolution?
I resolved not to make any more resolutions, but I broke that too quick.
281 of you voted, making it number 209 in the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you. The number one winner is Try Linux, followed by Dance the Security Tango more often. Half of that number of people want to buy a Mac. Some want to go back to XP. 27 of you, thank you, thanks to each and every one of you, said get Soundbites on a station in my city, and 9 of you said stop stealing music. So that's last week's poll. This week's poll is based on a story. We've talked a whole bunch about new DRM and old DRM and everything else. Well, an antitrust lawsuit filed against Apple on December 31st charges the company with maintaining an illegal monopoly on the digital music market. The plaintiff, Stacey Summers, alleges that Apple dominates the market for online video, online music, and digital music players, and that its dominance constitutes a violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act.
What movies are watching the other day? And somebody said you violated the Volstead Act, and the woman put, oh, it was The Thin Man. The cop was talking to Nick Charles, and he said, "Haven't you ever heard of the Volstead Act?" And Nora popped up and said, "That's all right, we're married." Which, never mind, I guess if you don't know the Volstead Act, that's not funny. The attorneys are seeking to have their lawsuits certified as class action. Apple has engaged in tying and monopolizing behavior, placing unneeded and unjustifiable technological restrictions on its most popular products in an effort to restrict consumer choice and to restrain what little remains of its competition in the digital musical markets. The complaint states Apple CEO Steve Jobs has himself compared Apple's digital music dominance to Microsoft's personal computer operating system dominance, calling Apple's music store the Microsoft of music stores in a meeting with financial analysts. That's actually true. After years of government scrutiny, Microsoft was found to be exercising illegal monopoly power in late 1999. The complaint against Apple claims the company controls 75% of the online video market, 83% of the online music market, and more than 90% of the hard drive-based music player market, and 70% of the flash-based music player market. A spokesman for Apple says the company does not comment on pending litigation. So my question to you is, where do you buy your online music? Your choices are Amazon, AmiStreet, iTunes, MagnaTune, Napster, Rhapsody, Other, Leave an Opinion, and Nowhere. I had to limit it. There are like 20 places you can buy music and download free music and everything else, but I had to limit it at least a little bit. So far, 93 of you have voted, with Nowhere being the top choice, followed by iTunes, followed by Other. When you do want to leave an opinion, by the way, check out the little yellow box at the bottom of the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion, and it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
A Walter Lantz cartoon, one of my faves, where you can actually leave an opinion. While you're there, please check out my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. Oh, he's good. I have forums. I have a newsletter I put out quite regularly. You can search the newsletter to answer your questions, and it's only all $15 a year. I don't know why you're not all members. I just don't get it. Right now, there are 11 opinions, so check them out. And that's my story about our website for the day. Definitely check it out. I'm buying more stuff from Amazon from now on. I'll tell you that right now. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Happy New Year.
And the same to you.
Wondering about laptop batteries. I have a Dell. How long should they last? Is a year about right, or too long, or too short?
No,
nobody knows. And nobody says.
But usually more than a year.
Well, no, it's not the time.
3,000 recharges.
Yeah. No, 500 recharges.
500?
500 to 600 recharge cycles for a standard laptop battery.
All right.
The smaller AA batteries and camera batteries are different. But since the laptop batteries put out more power, it's usually 500 to 600 charge cycles, which
for
80% capacity. So you're right. If you use it all day long, charge it all night long, that's 500 day. Excuse me. So year and a half, maybe 2 years.
Okay.
Most people don't read the, I guess not fine print. Most of the laptops come with the thing about caring for your battery. Generally speaking, a way to lengthen your battery life is just never discharge it. So keep the thing plugged into the wall as often as you can and condition it every month or so. Let it drain completely and charge it completely. So then you're only doing one cycle a month.
Right.
So I'll drain it all the way till it turns off.
Basically, yeah, ignore all of the warnings saying you're on low battery, then plug it in and let it charge for a day or so.
Okay. When I go to the laptop, it takes, it's not as bright. In fact, it's quite a lot dimmer. Is there a way to get my monitor so it's brighter like it is when it's plugged in?
There's,
I can't really.
Well, you can change the brightness. The problem is the brighter you make it, the less the battery lasts.
Yeah, there's usually two settings. There's a general brightness setting where you control the brightness of your monitor. And then there's often an energy saver setting which will dim your monitor to save the battery life.
Well, are they in power options?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
In addition, there's usually a function key equivalent on one of the F keys that increases or decreases the brightness of the monitor.
Yeah, on the Mac laptop, it's F1 and F2.
Right. On my particular laptop here, it's function F5 and 6, lower and higher.
Okay.
The other,
so it's the trade-off between power usage and battery life.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by the fact that the battery in my OLPC, I'm only saying this, of course, to make Marcy and her kids crazy.
And my battery in the OLPC is good for 2,000 charges and discharges. It also has absolutely no toxic chemicals in it.
And that's how a lot of the industry is changing. And we talked about the FAA ban. The current batteries are lithium oxide. Nickel metal hydride is sort of dying off, but it's lithium ion. So the lithium is the active chemical, and that's a hazardous waste. They're switching battery technologies to different types of technologies that can hold the charge as well, that don't have the toxic wastes and will last for longer charging cycles. The problem is that we're making computers more and more powerful. So you look at batteries, you know, 5 years ago, they were 1,000 milliamp hours, and right. Now today, they're 3,000 milliamp hours, but they still only run your computer for 2 hours because you're making the battery do more because the computer's doing so much more.
Right.
All righty.
And you can probably find on the internet a battery cycle count. And Apple uses intelligent batteries with chips in them, and inside the operating system, you can tell how many cycles your battery's gone through.
Right.
It's a tough thing. It's kind of like car tires. It's a tough thing because there is a warranty on the battery. But is the battery dead because you wore it out, or is it dead because it was defective?
Yeah.
Right.
And that's
right.
It's
a hard call.
Yeah. So if your tires are rated for 20,000 miles and you need new tires in 10,000 miles, does that mean it was 10,000 hard miles, or is it defective?
How did you drive? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Eileen from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Eileen. What's your question?
Hi, it's really not a technical question. My daughter has a laptop at HP Pavilion, and my youngest daughter dropped it. So the screen is looking shattered.
Yep.
Where do I go?
Buy a new laptop.
Yeah.
A new screen is going to run you anywhere between $300 and $500.
All right, that's what I've looked at.
Yeah.
Plus a couple, 3 hours labor.
Pardon?
There's no one that has used ones?
Generally not. If you go on like eBay or one of the auction sites, you may find a dead computer with a good screen, and you could make a cannibal.
And the thing of it is, here's the key though: you've got to get the exact same model. So that's where we're going.
The exact same model.
Yeah,
and even then, it may be different because computer companies use different parts in the same model.
What I mean is it from the same run?
Yeah.
Well, the thing of it is I've had two on a couple of them. I've got a couple companies that I deal with. But I literally have to get the laptop in, take the back screen off, and read the model and serial number off of the back of that to match it up to the one that they're going to replace it with.
A lot of times it's the cable connections that are different.
Yeah, they place them.
Yeah, the same display panel, but different cables.
Within one run of a laptop, I've seen them change the location of the connector to where the newer one is a little shorter, so the old one wouldn't reach, just where they position it.
And it's the designers don't think of that when they're designing the next version. They're just, you know, whatever their design goals are, they need to make this change.
Whatever's cheapest.
So, you're looking at, like I say, between $300 to $500.
Yeah, I got prices on $400 and $500. But on eBay, I did see exact same computer.
Tell you what, if you email me the complete model number and that of the laptop, I'll see what I can get your price on.
That's great.
All right.
I'll do that.
Alrighty.
Thank you.
And some of them are hard to take apart. I did a model.
They're easy to want to put them back together again.
Just a lot of the laptops, the Mac laptops, the cases are glued together instead of screwed together. So it makes it a lot harder to take apart. So it's like a laminate between the glass and the bezel and the housing. It's a laminate, so it's stronger than a single. So how many people pick their computer up by their monitor?
A lot of people. A lot of people.
I've had some folks where I've had to use some of the edging. It's like a double 3M
double-sided tape. I had to buy a pack of clothespins to be able to pin it back together when I glued it back together.
Yeah.
It was hard to find wooden spring clothespins.
Yeah, that's
no one hangs
now.
Their clothes out anymore.
No. The easiest thing is you go over to...
I thought about binder clips, but I was afraid the metal would scratch.
Just go. What you do is you go over to Home Depot, you get yourself a couple wood clamps. And then you use a couple of small pieces of balsa wood that you put on there and then clamp it from the outside of the wood. The balsa wood
Soft. Our next caller is Brian from Rochester. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, I got a potential fix for the guy who was looking to play legacy games.
Oh, excellent.
Luke caller, I know you like that. It's your favorite part.
It is my favorite part. This is for Rick. Rick from Batavia.
I went through this with a couple of games last time that I upgraded my OS. And what you can do 9 times out of 10 is get them to run, if you Google or Yahoo, the name of the game, and then demo. there's quite a few websites out there that are actually trying to sell you versions of these games going back even to Windows 95.
Right.
Now, these demos are playable across platform.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, through the magic of this demo here, sometimes it'll load in like certain keys into the registry and certain drivers that will allow you to play your original game.
Which is a real unlocked non-demo game.
Oh, so when you run the demo, it puts the stuff into the registry. Then when you play the real game, it runs. That's
nice.
Very clever, Brian.
I'll believe you, it was hours and hours and hours. I'm a huge helicopter sim guy.
Sure.
And they haven't had a really decent one that's not like a shoot 'em up, which is okay.
Right.
But I like, you know, these really hardcore flying games.
Right.
And they just haven't had one out in forever. So it was like,
Have you tried X-Plane? Even though it's plain, there's some helicopters in it.
Very, very expensive. And, I don't make much.
You're right.
Wow, the free version lets you fly for 8 minutes.
I hear you.
That's longer than I've ever flown a real helicopter, so really, for me, that's not bad.
Yeah, well, that gives you 8 or 9 helicopters, too.
Well, it takes 2 minutes to launch and start up.
And there's a lot less fear involved in that one.
I did a loop with a 767 and landed upside down. Fell out of the sky upside down, and I could still raise and lower my landing gear.
All the passengers were dead.
All right, Rick, thank you so much. Brian, that's a great answer for Rick from Batavia. Thank you very much. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Rick, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. If criminals were to target unsecured wireless routers, they could create an attack that could piggyback across thousands of Wi-Fi networks in urban areas like Chicago and New York City, according to researchers at Indiana University. The researchers estimate that a Wi-Fi attack could take over more than 20,000 wireless routers in New York City within a 2-week period, with most of the infections occurring within the first day. The issue is that most of these routers are installed out of the box very insecurely. The researchers theorized that attack would work by guessing administrative passwords and then instructing the routers to install new worm-like firmware, which would in turn cause the infected router to attack other devices in its range. Because there are so many closely connected Wi-Fi networks in most urban areas, the attack could hop from router to router for many miles in some cities. Although the researchers did not develop an attack code that would be used to carry out this infection, they believe it would be possible to write code that guessed default passwords by first entering the default administrative password that shipped with the router, which almost nobody ever changes, of course, and then by trying a list of 1 million commonly used passwords one after the other. They believe that 36% of passwords can be guessed using this technique. Even some routers that use encryption could be cracked if they use the popular WAP, wired equivalent privacy algorithms, which security experts have been able to crack for years now. Routers that were encrypted using the more secure WPA, Wi-Fi Protected Access Standard, were considered impossible to infect. Yesterday, I was sitting in my kitchen updating this laptop. I try to update it before I come here so I don't get all those annoying messages while I'm doing it. And I looked at my network connection, and I had 7 wireless networks available to me.
Oh, yeah, you can go around most of
mine was not protected.
And you're not in an apartment building where that would be.
Right.
You're in houses.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which are a few feet apart.
Yes.
Yeah.
Apparently, I know one is across the street because they had their address as the name of the...
They had to distinguish it from all the other ones.
Yeah. And then I know another one was 2 doors down because they used their last name as their wireless router name. And the others had to be within fairly close distance. But I had that problem on my porch last summer where I've told this story before. I was connected and it was very, very slow and I got real porky about it. So I looked and I was on somebody else's Roadrunner connection. Well, I checked. I suddenly realized that I have DSL. I was on Roadrunner. Roadrunner itself, of course, is not slow. Let me hasten to say that. But I had a very weak connection. But it would just randomly, that's the one my machine had connected to when I opened up. I didn't bother to look. So I connected to my signal, which was much stronger, much cleaner, and DSL, so I wasn't sharing it with anybody, and it was much faster. But I found 7 of them yesterday.
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all. I go riding around, and the ones that you could tap into in the city, you'd be shocked.
At least most of the routers now talk you through the setup process of putting a password on. But how many people actually read that disk?
Right, yeah. Exactly. All right, our next caller is Herb from Spencerport, New York. Welcome, Herb. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I'm trying to network two XP Pro computers, and I want to use one of them for internet sharing. I have a dial-up connection, though.
Yep.
And first of all, I can't get the two computers to connect. I run through the wizard, and it sets up the one computer with a hard IP address, and then the other one I tried having tainted the IP address automatically, and it wouldn't connect. It says
right, it won't. You need to have a router in the middle creating the addresses for you, or you have to manually create your own addresses and subnet masks on each computer.
Okay, that's weird.
Well, that's normal.
No,
you need
a
server.
That's the way it normally does.
Right, you need a server handing out addresses for the computer to get an address.
Okay. I just thought that the software in XP would take care of that for a small, just a two-computer connection.
For the second computer, yes, but not the first computer.
Okay. Right, well, the first computer, it sets it up with a hard address, and...
Well, it shouldn't. The address of the first computer would come from your internet server.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. Well, it ends up with two IP addresses, one for the local network and one for the dial-up connection.
Right.
And it gets an IP address from my internet provider for the dial-up connection, but then for just within it's the small local connections, it assigns a different IP address for the, for want of a better term, I'll call it the server. It always hardwires that to a particular IP address. I got them working together when I would manually set the second IP address, and then they would talk. But then in the process of doing this, I was also trying to set up a remote connection from the second computer to the what I'm calling the server, and I couldn't see that computer at all until I manually set up just a set address on the second computer.
Mm-hmm. It's because the first computer is not serving out addresses.
Okay.
Let me suggest...
That's what internet sharing is supposed to do, is turn that computer into its own DHCP NAT server.
Right. Let me suggest that you make a small change. These are both desktops or laptops?
No, I'm just doing two desktops. Eventually, I want to add in the laptop as well.
One thing you might think about is buying a dial-up router.
Which are hard to find anymore.
Wi-Flyer. You can buy it at Amazon.
Yeah, well, I was trying to do this without buying stuff.
Well, I understand that, but here's the way this thing works. You can connect wirelessly or whatever. It connects at 54 megabits per second to your dial-up. If you're connecting computer to computer, that's useful.
Yeah.
But the idea is this thing sits on the network, and anytime you want to make a connection, you use this thing either, I believe it does both wired and wireless.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. I bought one for my father-in-law, and I just can't remember which brand I bought, but I think it was Wi-Flyer.
Yeah, I saw that online.
Yeah, and it's a real router, so it serves internet protocol addresses. So when you say you want to dial up, well, what you do is you actually set it up as if it were a real network.
Right.
And that's easier, much easier under every operating system.
Well, and
then it dials up for you, or if it's already dialed up, it just connects in.
Right.
Now, there's a great website called Practically Networked that has a lot of this networking information, and I posted a link on how to share dial-up connections. And
excellent.
They go through the steps to let you share a dial-up from one computer to your others.
Okay, well,
now, it's going to be even slower, especially on the second computer, than dial-up normally is.
Right.
So, yeah, that's something you can try.
Okie-doke. All righty, our next caller is Andrew from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Andrew. What's your question?
Hello, guys. I have a mouse problem, and if any of you are Monty Python fans, you'll understand the humor in that.
Yes.
I got a mouse for Christmas, and it bounces all over the screen.
Yep.
You installed the drivers for it?
No, there was no driver for it.
So it's using the standard Windows driver.
Yeah, probably why.
And it only started like 2 days ago. It was fine for like 4 or 5 days.
Is this wireless?
No.
Wrong answer.
I'm sorry about that.
Have you tried going to the website for this mouse manufacturer and getting the drivers?
No. There wasn't one. It's like stainless steel, and it has my initials in it. And it just, for some reason, like 48 hours, 72 hours ago, it started bouncing all over the screen.
Have you rebooted your machine?
Yes, many times.
And it's probably done some Windows updates.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah, is it an optical mouse? Is it a mechanical mouse?
No. It's a generic mouse.
Right, but is it optical or mechanical? Does it have a ball in it or a camera in it?
Ball.
So it's an old mechanical mouse. Make sure there's no gunk in it. You might have to take the ball out and scrape down the rollers.
I've done that.
And what are you running it on? What kind of mouse pad?
It's just a typical, mouse pad.
There are a couple of viruses that make your cursor do that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's bizarre. I've done, I have like 1,000 virus scans and stuff on my computer and spyware and stuff like that. And all of your stuff, by the way.
So when you go
in... Let me make a suggestion.
Loose cable?
I've tried that actually just like 2 hours ago.
Tried what?
The loose cable.
All right. Try this. If you go into the control panel and look at mouse.
Right.
Is this a PS2 mouse or a USB mouse?
PS2.
Okay. Under the PS2 compatible mouse properties.
Yes.
Right. You click on hardware.
Yes.
And.
He's reaching for it.
Select properties again. And you'll come up with another box. Go to the Advanced Settings tab.
Okay.
And change the sample rate. I believe most of them default to 100 samples per second.
Right.
Make that smaller, 80, 60, 40.
So I guess,
It will be a little less responsive.
Right.
But I believe in this case that's what you want.
So you move your mouse a quarter inch on the pad and it jumps 6 inches on screen?
Yes, that's...
Yeah, that's the mouse sensitivity setting.
I understand that, but I don't understand why it just started happening.
Tell you what.
Something changed.
A Windows update may have loaded. Do you still have the old mouse?
Yes.
Try plugging that in for a day and just see if it changes some of the settings back.
Okay.
Try that for a day and then go back to the original
mouse. And see if you have the same problem. Then you'll know if it's the mouse or something else in the machine.
It could be the mouse happened to coincidentally die.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yep. All right, give those things a try and let us know. Thanks, Andrew.
That's annoying when your mouse jumps
around.
Our
next caller is Mike from Churchville. Thank you, Mike. Oh, actually, I have that problem only with one game on my Linux box. If I play Open Arena, the mouse jumps all over the place, which is, of course, the way you aim.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm suddenly shooting at the wall, my own foot, everything else. But every place else, it works fine. It just doesn't work there. It's clearly something to do with the game. Sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Hey, I have an old DOS program that I downloaded from a guy, and I checked with him. And he said there is no key or code to make it work. It's supposed to be fully operational. But I'm assuming that it's probably very old, like an 8 or a 4-bit.
Yeah.
And when I try to open it, I get a blank DOS screen, and then a window comes over. It says 16-bit MS-DOS subsystem is the heading. And it says the system file is not suitable for running MS-DOS and Microsoft Windows applications. Click close to terminate the application.
Wait, in this case, you might have to right-click on it. If you've installed it and there's an icon on the desktop, what you might have to do is right-click on it, and you go into the compatibility mode.
Yeah.
Now, this has to be clicking on the real program, not on a shortcut that might be on the desktop.
Oh, you can't use it from the desktop? Well,
No, you can't. No, but I'm saying what Dave is about to tell you.
Okay.
If you click on something and you don't see this stuff, you're on a shortcut, not on the real file.
And under the compatibility mode, you can fake it out and say, try telling it, run this as though it's 98.
I tried 98 and 95.
Can you open a DOS command window by itself and run other DOS commands? Because maybe it's not that program, maybe it's DOS.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. And I tried to find that. Isn't that under...
Go to start, run, type command, and you'll get a command prompt.
Type CMD.
Or CMD.
The run, that's your right, the run.
Yep. Some Windows is command and some
CMD. Yeah, but it's not really DOS anymore.
No, it hasn't been DOS
since Windows 95.
Right.
So it just simply may be that this old DOS program doesn't actually work anymore.
Well, I actually called the guy and asked him when I checked with him to see if there was a key or a code to make it operational in case he had to...
But what did he...
Well, it doesn't matter if there was
He said he runs his on his XP computer all the time. He just clicks it and it just plain old starts and runs.
Yeah, that's what makes me think that the 16-bit the error messages he read about the environment not working makes me think DOS itself
isn't
working.
Service Pack 2 on yours?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, try the command prompt, see if other DOS commands, DIR, CD, you know, something, things like that, see if they work.
That might
help.
Yeah. But and let us know one way or the other. And email us, or go in the forums and let us know what this program is. We'll take a look. All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes with Sound Bites at 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
Thank you. It's my theme song.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
Okay. And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites.
You know, you're special. That's because you have your own theme song.
I have my own theme song.
You've made it, officially. You can retire today a happy and fulfilled man.
But poor. Insanely poor. Happy and fulfilled, but insanely poor. And I can hum my own theme song on the way to the poorhouse. Gee, thanks. Oh, I should probably do this one because this, I think, will be more interesting to everyone. Time Warner's Warner Brothers Entertainment unit announced on Friday that it would start releasing high-definition DVDs exclusively using Sony's Blu-ray DVD format. This news is a major victory for Sony as it attempts to make Blu-ray the high-definition standard over rival Toshiba's HD DVD format. Sony Pictures, 20th Century Fox, and Disney have already decided to use Blu-ray exclusively since Warner Brothers just moved over. That leaves Paramount and Universal as the only HD DVD boosters among the major Hollywood studios.
A whole new DVD player.
Well, you did before. That was the big thing. The HD DVD and the Blu-ray DVD are mutually incompatible, and it's been lined up by movie studios. So if you like Disney movies, if you have kids, then you're going to go Blu-ray. If you like action movies like, you know, Matrix, then you're going to go HD DVD. Or what everyone else has been doing is waiting for the combo players to come down in price, which they're down to about $800 now to get an HD DVD Blu-ray combo.
Well, but this may be this may be the
big coup. Yeah,
yeah. With Warner Brothers movies, until now they've produced titles in both format. They said they would continue to release HD DVDs until the end of May, after which they would stop producing them. High definition DVD adoption has suffered because consumers have been confused about which standard to choose. Players using one standard are unable to play DVDs played using the other standard. The window of opportunity for high-definition DVD could be missed. Yeah, but that's true because, you know, next week something new will come along and we'll all be changing again. Well, if the format confusion continues to linger, said the chairman and CEO of Warner Brothers, we believe exclusively distributing in Blu-ray will further the potential for mass market success and ultimately benefit retailers, producers, and most importantly, consumers.
Paramount's doing something interesting, though. They just re-released the remastered Star Trek Classic Original Series. $200 a season, which I hate.
Yeah.
But it's SD on one side and HD DVD on the other side. So they're putting both formats on one physical disc.
Oh, you know one other thing?
Too bad there's not a third side for Blu-ray.
Well, they were doing some of that. HD DVD on one side and Blu-ray on the other side. But then you can't play it in your standard player. So this is nice. You play it in your standard player. When you get a newer player, it'll play there too better.
If you get an HD DVD player. Right. Otherwise, you're going to have to buy it all over again.
Well, you get the combo players eventually. And a lot of people don't remember that the CD Plus and CD Minus and DVD Plus, DVD Minus are separate, mutually incompatible formats. And now we have drives that will read them all and don't care.
Right.
That'll happen eventually,
and
too.
And those drives cost $15.
Right. Well, they used to be thousands of dollars, right, just like the combo HD DVD Blu-ray discs.
The other story that you missed?
Yeah.
It's going to affect a lot of folks. And it's going to happen this year, going from analog to digital. Your phones, your GPS systems. If you folks have home security systems that use a phone line, they've got to be converted over. There's a number of cars that have, say,
OnStar
and all the old ones. You've got to get them converted because they're just going to stop working as of this year, unlike TV, which we've got one more year.
And they're probably going to do something about that as well. But that's just broadcasting.
But you got to, like their phones and everything else, you got to take them on in and they can put another chip in it to convert it. So it'll do an analog/digital.
Right. Most of the old phones that work off analog aren't even sold anymore. And anybody that has them would have updated it by now. And I don't think this affects security systems, by the way. We don't want to scare people.
No, they do.
Not if it's a POTS phone line. We're talking about over-the-air cell phones.
Yes. Analog cell phone transmissions.
I have security system. And they literally had to take out the old signal for the phone and put in a new system just this year, past year.
It's because it's wireless. It works off cell phones. Yep. The ones that plug into the home phones aren't going to be affected.
No, I'm saying cell phones.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing people don't realize. They may have an analog wireless phone.
Right.
And then the analog television broadcast ends next February.
And but that's strictly broadcast.
Right.
Cable, if you've got cable or dish.
Right. Analog cable stops in 2012, so we got a few more years.
And here's the deal with that. You know, retailers are telling people, well, run on out and get yourself a HD TV or a digital TV. It's just like, no, you don't need to do that. If you have cable or satellite or that type of thing, you're okay. But if you still have rabbit ears on top of the old TV, that's the one you're going to be affected. And if you got cable, you're fine.
You're not necessarily going to need a new TV.
You need a new TV.
Yeah,
right. You definitely need it.
You don't need a new TV. You need a new tuner. And they're expecting tuners to be $50-$60. And the FCC is putting out a coupon. That you'll be able to...
$40. It's already out.
Yeah,
you know how many
coupon.
Husbands are going to be pissed at you?
Yep.
Or you just killed their whole legacy of justifying the new, bigger screen for the Super Bowl.
I have a really hard time spending $2,000 on a flat-screen LCD TV when my old-fashioned RCA at home still works just fine. Maybe that's just me. I really don't need to see the pimple up close on someone's face.
I have an HD TV and on an HD channel... Really? People are ugly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
People are ugly.
That's what they're saying about the Star Trek remastered. You can tell it's a mannequin there dead in the red shirt.
Yeah. And a lot of actors and actresses are complaining because while they look fine on regular TV, they are ugly. Ugly.
Hot marks and everything else.
Boy, you see stuff that you don't want to know about. Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, it's nice, you know, fine, clearer picture, blah, 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 but it's freaking out a lot of people who are running out to stores thinking they have no choice but to spend between $800 and $2,000 on a TV that back in the day would probably cost maybe a couple hundred.
Yeah.
I want it to be known that on behalf of all the husbands in the audience, I did give Steve Ray a whack.
Hey, thank you very much. We're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, hang on. We'll be with you in a minute. Back soon with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Lint, and me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 50 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Lint.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. Our next caller is George from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
I have a laptop that lost the internet connection. I'm trying to set up a connection to it. I have two desktops that are both have Realtek sound cards into them. If I plug the high-speed internet connection into that, can I get that to work?
No, you have to plug it into an Ethernet card, not a sound card.
Well, that's why I meant not the...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Pat is worried there.
Yeah. Well, I tried plugging it in, and it came up with... I had to make another connection. But it came up, if you go into the network connections there, it shows it with the Ethernet card from the other computers. Like, in other words, it shows a Realtek in there, and this has a WAN, W-A-N?
W-A-N is the wireless. It will also have a real Ethernet card in it, which may well also be a Realtek card.
Or it could be an Intel, or it could be an SMC.
Well, but it says it's a Realtek.
Yeah.
But that's the one in your machine, not in some other machine.
Oh, because it's the same kind as what I have.
That's
in my
fine.
Machine.
Yeah, that's, yeah. That's one of the most common, particularly for laptops.
Oh, well, my question is, how do I get this thing to work if I plug it in?
The next step is that you have to reset your cable or DSL router. Time Warner, Frontier, all the cable and DSL broadband companies only allow you one computer. So your
internal router.
Yes, we do.
You still may have to reset. That router, then.
Yeah, so we got
three computers onto it now. We've never had this problem.
How many ports out of the back do you have?
I'm not connecting it up right now. I took it out of one computer and put it in the back of this computer, the laptop. So it's not really...
That may be the problem. No,
he's dealing with just the cable modem.
No, he isn't.
You have your own, like, Linksys or Netgear router?
Yeah, I have a Linksys router.
Right, okay. And he took the connection from the back of one of his computers that goes into the router and plugged that connection into his laptop. But what's happened is the router didn't recognize that you had changed computers and so
right,
it didn't send
do
it
a reset.
New, yeah, you may have to reset. How many ports do you have in the back of that router?
Should be four or five.
Usually four. But I have seen cases where the DHCP server in those Linksys routers fail. They stop serving new addresses, but they still work okay for the old computers. Reset that router, and it may start working again.
Plug them all in at once.
Shut everything down.
Right.
Unplug both the cable modem and the Linksys. Then plug in the cable modem. Plug in the
wait a couple of minutes just so it's
the router.
Ready.
Plug in the cable modem and turn it on.
And then plug in the router and turn that on.
Wait a couple more minutes.
And then turn on your machines. And they'll connect.
We're done for another week. I really want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who most ably, again, he's not that bright. He keeps coming here week after week and donates his time, his energy, and his talent to record the show, to make the podcast sound as brilliant as they do. We can't get rid of him, and we don't want to. And, of course, Rob Linton, who is the most wonderful human being there is, because he's about to cut my... He had his hand on the button right there. I'm Nick Francesco. We want to thank all of you called in. Apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. Please call in earlier and more often next week. Remember, join us in the forums. Join us in the chat room next week. We do have a link online to the cameras and everything else, so that if you're calling in during the show, you'll see all of that. We want to thank you once again. Have a great week. We will be back next week with the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.